KBOO, Portland, Oregon, bridging the gap between prisons, prisoners, and the community. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Plugged In on KBOO is a radio show dedicated to underground electronic music. The show is hosted by DJ Tronic and features deep house, tech house, techno, drum and bass, breakbeats, future bass, downtempo, and more. Plugged In frequently has local producers and DJs on the show, and we provide info about upcoming events in Portland, including free ticket giveaways. Plugged In airs the first and third Friday of every month from 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. Pacific time.
Pacifica Radio in San Francisco. This is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein with Miguel Gavilán Molina. Today on the show, a look at the history of racist police and government violence in Arizona with the longtime indigenous rights activist and independent investigator Salvador Reza. Also joining us is Richard Becker, Answer Coalition founder, in the middle of many protests and what's going on in the streets over the weekend. And also joining us is our own Francisco Herrera. He'll join us from the streets where he's working with some day laborers getting ready for who knows what. All this and more coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein, and I'm here with Miguel Gavilán Molina. We are in the mothership, Gavilán. We're getting ready for an interesting weekend. We're going to be in the streets tomorrow, broadcasting and working with the entire Pacifica Network to bring a global and national coverage. We'll try and make it global, of the situation on the ground. What happens tomorrow? It's No Kings Day. What does that mean to you, No Kings, Gavilán?
Well, it's no kings and no war. Since 1776, this country and its so-called founding fathers, declared in the Constitution that there wouldn't be a monarch, that there wouldn't be a king. Since 1776 until recently, where the U.S. Supreme Court anointed the sexual predator, the criminal, in the White House, in the Oval Office, as king. So there's a massive pushback from people of all classes, all generations and cultures coming together and saying, hey, We want democracy. At this point, democracy is trampled. We need to resurrect it. So tomorrow is a national time, local and across the country, to reclaim this country and to make it very clear. What I hope to see, Dennis, is that at least anywhere from 10 to 15 million people turn out.
Across the country.
Across the country. Yeah. That would send shockwaves to the existing corrupt government, in D.C. So tomorrow is a time to come together, but not just for that one day. So a lot of people have done that. They come out and they protest, they take part, and then they go home to their comfort zones and back to their lives. Well, that's a certain class of people, middle class and upper middle class. But to the poor, and particularly to the brown masses and black folks, you know, it's back to being on alert. You know, there is a low-intensity domestic war raging across this country, unfortunately, because of the situation in the Middle East and the illegal, unconstitutional war being waged there by the White House. And, of course, Netanyahu in Israel, the war rages. And on the local domestic front, we've got the ongoing soap opera saga of the Espin files. So nobody pays attention on the low-intensity war raging, and it's only getting bigger, uglier, and they're about to double the size of ICE. So what is tomorrow? Time to come together and end the ICE age.
I'm thinking of later on in the broadcast, we're going to be joined by Richard Becker of Answer Coalition. And I'm thinking, Miguel, we've worked with Dick over so many years, over decades. And I'm trying to remember all the different organizations that he founded on the way to this one, which is timely, and clearly Answer Coalition is in the middle of all of it. But do you remember all those?
Yes, I do, Dennis. Originally, before Answer Coalition was organized and founded by Richard and others, Gloria Larriva and other folks,
who's in Cuba.
It was the, I believe, the International Action Center,
right.
Which was something that Ramsey Clark, former Attorney General,
yeah.
Help found. And that's where Richard, his brother, and of course Gloria Larriva and other folks.
That's amazing that you say that, because I have on my wall a picture of Dick Becker, the Attorney General, myself, and Gloria Larriva. And it was at an event, something like this one.
We've been at, you know, during the 80s, you know, the wars, Desert Storm, Ronald Reagan and the death squads, you know, which displaced thousands, hundreds of thousands of folks in Central America, but also hundreds of thousands died because of U.S.-sponsored death squads.
And U.S.-sponsored drug trade, because people don't know, this is one of the stories we broke, that in terms of supporting illegal covert actions, the CIA turned to major drug traffickers. And this is one of the stories that nobody believed us for about 10 years until they believed us. And all of a sudden, for some reason, the CIA director is in Los Angeles trying to explain to the crowds of black people, oh no, we didn't deliver cocaine into these communities
for
to support
crack.
Covert action for crack, right? Anyway, sorry, but this is the history of what we are dealing with. Let's speaking of history, we're joined by somebody who has been in the battle, who is in history, in modern history. Actually, he has a beautiful new book. What is it called?
It's called Mase Ualali.
Jornaleros
Machalwali.
Welcome. Well, thank you for the translation. The book is absolutely exquisite. And we Salvador, could you talk a little bit about your own background and remind us, because where we picked it up with you was when we brought the team here from the Bay Area to report from a day labor center in Phoenix, Arizona. But what was going on the ground? You ended up in a tent or in handcuffs or in a jail or something.
In a glass cage.
In a glass cage.
All of the above. Back then in 2007, Arpaio started what we see today in the streets.
Sheriff.
Sheriff Arpaio. He was the one that actually trained Donald Trump and all that he's doing today. But they were like going to the day labor corners like they're doing today, and they were targeting jornaleros, and they had a 287G agreement which allowed local police, which were the sheriffs, to actually act as ICE agents, at that time of Border Patrol. Anyway, they were able to question anybody, stop anybody, just like today. And we rose up, and they laborers themselves were the one that started the fight against Arpaio, and targeting a furniture store where he was operating out of. And we were able to make him back off. And actually, he had to run away from that furniture store. And then he started targeting the whole community for the next 6-7 years until we got rid of him.
And he put, but he created, he was imprisoning people in very interesting and cruel ways, wasn't he? On display, this guy, it's almost like he lit the fuse for Trump.
Exactly. He had a tent city, and that tent city was people that were not sentenced. They were unsentenced. And he kept them at 120-degree weather with no air conditioning on tents and basically tortured them that way, you know. And he said, well, if our soldiers can be in Iraq at 120-degree weather, why can't we? And he would parade him through the streets bring the media to show him off and all that. However, right now, the second in command is the new sheriff, and he's just as bad.
Just as bad.
But that's what we're doing right now, trying to organize not only the day laborers now, but actually there's a lot of allies that are springing up and helping out, like they're going to be doing tomorrow.
It's good to have you with us, Salvador. And I know that, when that struggle was happening in Arizona, we took 3 different trips to Phoenix, you know, to support what you were doing and the organization you were at that time working with, Dona Tierra, with Tupac Acosta. I remember those times and days, and the psychological violence that Arpaio was posing on, what we call the tent city, because he built, rather than putting people in buildings, with air conditioning or some kind of protection from the sun, he had them in tents, and he also had them dressed up, I think, in pink jumpsuits and pink underwear.
Pink underwear, pink socks, pink jumpsuits.
Unbelievable.
Well, wouldn't that be? Couldn't lawsuits be put together to support? Because that's really the idea of dressing people down, displaying them in the street, imprisoning them in a way that really risks their life directly. Wouldn't that be illegal?
Well, he got a lot of lawsuits, but he always won the one on the dress code, because he said that was so they could identify them in case they escaped,
Escape into the desert.
But he got a lot of lawsuits, and even today we're paying for that because a lot of people sued him, and most people won, and something like to the tune of $340 million. We've paid on lawsuits since the time of Arpaio to today, just on the racial profiling part.
Well, one of the things that I also noticed, Salvador, and I remember that there was a lot of women involved, just like we see today, like with the United Farm Workers, the majority of the leadership and in positions of, affecting the work, affecting policy, is being done by women coming up, young women, middle-aged women, abuelitas. In this particular struggle, you were against Sheriff Arpaio and his racist policies and conduct. Women were involved with Dona Tierra and yourself. And it's like, there was a lot of support. I know that the Puente Project, which is a lot of young people, came into the mix. But how was it what was it you think that attracted women into this struggle with you, with Dona Tierra against Arpaio?
Well, women have always been in the forefront of the revolution, all the way from the Mexican Revolution, all the way down to, the Mexican Revolution. They said that the federal soldiers were more afraid to attack women with children because they were better fighters. In other words, they were protecting their young,
It's beautiful.
But what happens is that the female component of the movement is stronger because they, to me, you know, they're the ones that nurture the community, and without them, you know, like all male organizations, like it used to happen a little bit in the 60s, it doesn't happen anymore. You know, it's actually more there's more of a duality in the movement, what I can say is in our movement, in the movement against Arpaio, the Masawali movement, the women were like you know, las comadres from the barrios and all of that. They were the strength of the movement, you know. Without them, it wouldn't have happened, you know. And that's what my book does. My book basically, you know, just for your information, Masawali means those who deserve honor for their work. And it's an Nahuatl word. That's the title, yeah. But, you know, we had, you know, the comadres were like a part of it, and it was mostly señoras from the barrio. And what I found out is there's a lot of barrio natural leaders, and that's what we try to recruit through the Comité del Barrio, attract the natural leaders from the barrio, and they were the ones that started leading the movement instead of... and then we put it to the point where actually it was the Masewali, the working class, the workers, that were making the decisions, which a lot of young people couldn't understand because... you know, they think they're so smart that they can basically just go and plan something and then transmit it to the community, and the community is going to follow. But without the buy-in from the community, you're going to be just you know, extreme left groups that nobody follows. You know, so most of our organizing was directly with the familias of the barrio.
That's what made it so powerful. You were actually able to bring in the barrio, the heart, you know, of the people, to mobilize el pueblo. The other thing that I'm really glad, and I've shared this with Dennis and other folks, is that you really, you know, people need to be re-educated. There's an attempt right now by the illegal, unconstitutional, lawless government and the sexual predator in the Oval Office, who at this point continues with hate mongering and so forth, and trying to really make us separate from the reality of what is, you know, la raza, what is, you know, indigenous brown folks within the U.S. territories. And the book is excellent, Salvador, because it educates people, you know, on, for instance, the word immigrant versus the word migrant. I mean, you really get down and explain it, and I think people need to really pay attention, because there's a part where you say they consider us strangers in our own land. You know, we are immigrants when we immigrate from one country to another. But here in the Southwest, it is, what we call occupied America, you know, by colonial forces back in the 1800s. They took half of Mexico, you know, after U.S. aggression and violence. But here we are today within our own lands and considered strangers, foreigners, outsiders, you know, and even illegal. And you and I know that there's no such thing as an illegal human being. But you really get into the book to explain this. Do you find yourself, when you talk to people, you know, when we approach, you know, Spanish-speaking communities, la raza, whether you're Chicano, Mexicano, Centro Americano, Latino Americano, you know, people seem to know the language. But for an audience that is non-Latino, non-Indigenous, have you found yourself having to explain to people that we are not strangers to these lands? We're Indigenous, you know, and how can we be illegal, you know, in our ancient ancestral lands? Do you come across that, Salvador, and how do you respond to that?
You know, usually the biggest problem is our own conditioning, our own brainwashing, because we've been brainwashed from the point of the Spaniards calling us Hispanos, and then the French calling us Latinos, and everybody baptizes us. But when we chose our own name, which was the Chicano movement and then Chicanos, then Richard Nixon came up with in the census with the word Hispanic, and now everybody's so confused because now they're Hispanic, Latinos, Latinx, and all of that. And that confusion is done on purpose. But nadie dice soy indio o soy indígena, except for people like us in Tonatierra and people that know the history. And this book is mostly anything else, you know, a way of bringing back, you know, that thing that in the Chicano movement connected us to our Mexica past, our indigenous past, which, you know, it can be Ramuri, Apache, Dene. We're all the same, you know. We're and basically, it's going back to erasing those or trying to recover that lost memory or manipulated memory by, you know, centuries of brainwashing, and that's the hardest part, because people. What we found out when we're fighting Sheriff Joe, what we found out is that we had two adobes in Tonatierra. I don't know if you ever saw them, but they date back about 900 years. And those two adobes, whenever somebody came in and said, es que yo soy ilegal, I would tell them, hey, here are your documents, you know? Those adobes are 900 years old, and they were disinterred when they expanded the airport, and they found 120, 130 remains of the Hohokam, and those adobes were there. So we recover them, and then we have them in our altar. And basically with that, you know, even Manu Chao, I don't know if you know who Manu Chao is. He's a famous singer. So Manu Chao came over here and, you know, hears that word, illegal.
I remember.
And then we basically told them, you know, like, we're not illegal, you know, no somos ilegales. And he got it. And then, you know, he called me. He said, look, I cannot change the wording because it's already, like, it's already recorded. But I'm going to sing it. I'm going to say, Arpaio is illegal. Arizona is illegal. La Frontera is illegal. And he, you know, he integrated those words into the song. But the main thing is that the main problem is that nobody teaches. I mean, I just went to a Mecha conference they're from the Maricopa County, Mechas. And those kids, their teachers don't teach them anything. You know, they don't know their past. They don't even know their recent past. They don't even know who Joe Arpaio was, you know? And it's sad, you know, because the parents are working all the time and they come back really late, and many times they don't even want to know about it because it was so traumatic for them. And then the teachers cannot even say it anymore because they're trying to pass laws that if you teach history from a non-traditional U.S. Perspective, then they can actually put you in jail, you know. So it's really bad. But the thing is, we have to do the work in the houses. We have to do the work in our organizations, and then we have to do the book, the work. You know, hopefully with this book, I can, you know, reintroduce some of the concepts that have been lost.
Well, we're hoping that you'll come up here in the Bay Area, Salvador, do a tour, and we'll do the Flashpoints La Onda Bajita team will do a tour with you, and we're looking forward to that. I've got one big question, though, before we have to let you go. So,
okay.
Joe Arpaio was then, Trump is now. We might be bordering on the edge of another global war, call it World War III or whatever you want. It could have nuclear weapons. There's certainly a lot of saber-rattling about what's possible in terms of mass destruction. What do you think the role of the indigenous communities are now, the Chicano communities? What's your vision? Are you all going to participate in the No Kings coming up, this big national protest tomorrow?
No, there's going to be demonstrations all over the city. We have a, every Saturday we have a demonstration in front of the Home Depot where they've been arresting jornaleros since January, since the beginning of January. They've arrested about 5 or 6 jornaleros already. So what we're gonna do, we're gonna hold our every Saturday conference, and we're inviting everybody from the No Kings, because the No Kings rallies here, they're gonna be all over the place, but the big one is gonna be in the afternoon. But if they choose to, they can come in and be part of the one in the morning, and in the afternoon, you know, there's gonna be a walk from the Capitol to the 4th Avenue Jail, where Arpaio used to hold the people, and they still hold people there because they still have the ICE officers there, basically screening anybody that goes in there for whatever, you know, no identification or minor things, and then they basically get deported. There's something like over 6,000 people have been deported just in a couple 6, of years, 3 years.
Wow.
From the 4th Avenue Jail. So they're going to go through there, and there's one thing that nobody wants to touch, you know. They don't want to they don't want to even like the city of Phoenix just passed a resolution that ICE cannot be using their parks and all of that, but they're still in the airport, and the city of Phoenix joins the is the owner of the airport, but they basically, you know, they have a lot of well, yes, but you cannot do it here, we cannot do it there, and all of that, which is, you know, it's understandable, but at the same time, that's why we have to create a separate movement that doesn't have to, you know, that forces the, you know, the municipalities in the state and the federal government to change things like they did over there in Minneapolis, because if we don't have a separate movement, the municipalities and other entities will push, you know, as long as it's political convenient, but they were not going to go on an all-out fight like we did against Arpaio.
All right. We want to leave it there for now, but we are so grateful for your presence, my brother, Salvador Reza, and Miguel and I are looking forward to seeing you in the Bay Area when you do that beautiful book tour. Congratulations on the book. And how do people get more information about it?
Okay, the book, you can go into the Tonatierra website, and we have it there for sale. But they can call me if they want to, or if they want to pay the big corporate interest, they have it too at Amazon. They have it over there. All the platforms have it right now.
Congratulations.
Worldwide.
Congratulations. We're grateful. Gavilan and I will talk to you soon. Be safe.
Thank you.
You are so welcome.
Si se puede, mas se vale.
Yeah, wow. That whole history we did with Arpaio, I forgot.
Oh, yeah.
How deeply we got engaged
there. 3 times
there.
We traveled out there and did live broadcasts.
And we never got arrested, did we?
Well,
we don't give up on microphones easy.
No, we don't go to get arrested. When that happens, we back away. And
right.
We come back another day. That's why none of us ever has been taken down. I mean, yeah, we've been beanbagged. Yeah, we've been gassed.
We're beaten, threatened. But they never got our microphones, and they never shut
right,
us down.
Right,
because
right.
We don't go, again, some people think it's a good idea to get arrested. But,
well, those are people that,
And I'm not against it. Disobedience, but not for reporters.
Well,
because how can we report?
Well, one thing that I do, Dennis, know is that, yeah, a lot of people don't mind getting arrested. They go on the ground, they turn stiff, they lay there, and then they get picked up and taken away. But most people are not brown. You get arrested and you're brown, you're just everyday folk, you don't have money. They're going to keep you there for 2 weeks, maybe a month, maybe 2, 3, 4 months. So we know, hey, other folks can get arrested and they're out that same day, they're out that evening, but we know better than that. But again, I think one of the things that's so important about this particular book, Dennis, it really looks at the spiritual roots of the fight against hatred and racial prejudice. That's what this book is about.
Absolutely. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back with Mr. Richard Becker, who is legendary in organizing protests that are meaningful and make change happen. We're looking forward to talking with them. Stay with us. Back, you are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, KPFA in the Bay Area, founded, this beautiful radio station founded in 1949 by people who literally went to war, went to jail to resist war, and they realized how important it was to have a free speech radio network. So, wow, we're still doing it. We're still doing it. Joining us is somebody who knows a lot about free speech and about organizing. That's our good friend, Richard Beckard. Richard Becker. Richard is the co-founder of the Answer Coalition. His partner now, I think, is still in Cuba, wrestling making sure that they don't lose the island as Trump is trying to organize a real takedown. Richard Becker, welcome to Flashpoints. Tell us about, it's been a long time coming. Are you excited? Do you see the No Kings movement as viable? You're somebody who's been in the movement for many decades. How do you look at it now?
Well, I think that we're at a very interesting moment, and it'll be super interesting to see the turnout tomorrow. The last I heard, it was over 3,300 cities and towns where demonstrations are taking place. And, you know, I think about, like, how has this developed? And the first one of the No Kings Day, I think, was in June, wasn't it? Something
yes.
like that?
Yes, it was.
And then there was one in October. And the one in June, there was, by the organizers didn't want to have any international issues involved. And I think there's been a struggle that's gone on over this about where now the international, the struggle against war in particular is there. It's there in the publicity. I think it's there in the consciousness of many people, many of the people who started out, you know, thinking only of the domestic situation here. Now, I think, have come to see that these are very much connected, that the international, the international struggles, the anti-war movement, the anti-intervention movement is integrally tied to the domestic struggles, and that it's impossible to really see success in the struggles around free speech and benefits and rights that people have won that Trump's trying to take away. It's impossible to see that being that movement being victorious without having an understanding of the connection between the war machine and the struggle to crush countries like Iran and Cuba and Venezuela and others. And so I find it very encouraging because, you know, in a way it becomes more like a matter of class, kind of class consciousness, that like we see the other side is not our friend in any respect. They are the enemy. And we have to build the kind of movement of millions, and we're certainly hoping that the prediction that there'll be 12 million or 15 million tomorrow, that comes true. But the other thing I would say about it is that a year ago, there was a lot of dismalness. And I don't think the dismalness is there anymore. I think people are worried, but I think the people who are still talking gloom and doom, you know, are not paying attention to what's happening here. We're a long way from winning. There are many struggles, but I think that we can see that the movement against Trump and the Trump program, the billionaire program, because it's not just Trump, of course, that movement is going forward, and that it has the, because of the steadfastness of people who have been in it from the beginning, it's emerging. And one way you can see that it really is emerging is the splits that are happening within the Trump camp, of which there are many and numerous, including, of course, many of the base who thought that Trump was serious about not going to war and was serious about bringing down the price of things and the affordability and all of that. So I think a lot of people are jumping that ship. I think it was the weakness of Biden more than anything that propelled them toward the, not everyone, but a lot of people who were in the middle, really. And now they have, I think they're very much moving away from Trump.
Let me ask you, Dick, because you are a student, a longtime student of foreign policy. I want to ask you, give us with some clarity the role you see Israel playing in the context of this unfolding war, what's going on now. We know that American politicians, the leading American politicians, are absolutely owned by the Israeli lobby. So how does this cloud the movement and undermine the struggle?
Yeah, and that, I'm glad you raised that, because I think that is very important, that, you know, especially for the younger demographics, meaning people basically up to the age of 40, there's been a tectonic shift in the view toward Israel and the Palestinian struggle. That's a very big one. There still is, of course, a strong element among the ruling elite who are very much for Israel, who see Israel as essential to U.S. foreign policy aims, particularly in the Middle East. The Israelis, I think, are looking at this as an opportunity. You know, this is the sixth invasion since 1978, the sixth Israeli invasion of Lebanon. I mean, so you sort of get the picture of why they're doing it, is they intend to keep it. They intend to, this is part of the expansion of the State of Israel that has been desired since the State of Israel was founded by its founders back in 1948. They always have considered the 1948 borders to be inadequate. They've basically taken over most of the West Bank. They've taken over the Golan Heights, very rich land, which is often brought up. And now they've expanded that. And now the big symbol, the way you know what they intend to do, is they blew up the main bridge. They blew up a number of bridges between the south of Lebanon over the Litani River with the intention, I think clearly the intention, that's very beautiful country, very fertile country, that they intend to keep it. So we have that happening. Any of the people here, the political leaders here who keep defending the State of Israel are going to become known for the bankruptcy of their views and of the positions that they're taking. And that includes Gavin Newsom, who just withdrew his statement that Israel was an apartheid society, which of course it is.
Absolutely, Richard. But one of the things that I've noticed in this whole thing, and of course here in California and other parts of the country, they have actually passed legislation or resolutions that any criticism of Israel is anti-Semitic. You know, and I think that's the basis that they all operate from. But aside from that, I've also have recently seen, as of in the last few days, where the Israeli military, commanders are all of a sudden saying, hey, we're depleted, we're running out of ammunition, we're running out of arms. Well, you know, for the last 2 years, they've been basically daily bombardment, of Gaza, of Palestine. And now we see the government ready to throw another $2 billion into this conflict. It seems to be expanding and getting ready for what we call a forever war. What can people do, Richard, at this point? I know tomorrow's going to be, no King's Day, but as you said, there's been some eternal struggles within those organizations to finally say no war. You know, the war, the illegal war, the unconstitutional war needs to come. Well, how do you see this? Where do people need to be?
Well, I think anyone who's paying attention to the military and the so-called defense budget it really is a war budget, of course, that in addition to the about $1 trillion this year, a little bit under $1 trillion officially, but if you add in a number of other pieces of the puzzle, it's over $1 trillion. Now they're saying $1.5 trillion for next year, $200 billion more for the Iran war alone. That's $1.7 trillion. If you're wondering where the resources of society are going, I think that's very relevant, and no one can ignore this anymore. I mean, it can try, and you have the leaders who are people who are running around in the media and the universities and so on and forth, and saying that any criticism of the state of Israel or what the U.S. does with Israel is anti-Semitism. We just have to stand up to that and say, you know, no, we're not anti-Semitic. We're a movement that includes people of many nationalities, all kinds of ethnic groups and religions, and that's just trying to hide the reality of what's going on. The genocide that continues to go on, the expulsion of the Palestinians that continues to go on. So we have to just stand up to all of this stuff. We just, and I think if we do, we will win. If we can, you know, have that steadfastness that the Palestinians have talked about, using the word samud, meaning steadfast, we can be victorious. And, you know, and I think that we will be.
That's the voice of Richard Becker, ANSA Coalition, major organizer here in the Bay Area and around the country. I'm Dennis Bernstein with Miguel Gavilo Molina. And Richard, can you stay with us a little bit? I want to keep you on and invite into our conversation Francisco Herrera, who is a major organizer in various aspects of tomorrow's No King festivities. I know he's out and about getting ready, training, working with some day laborers. I guess they're getting ready for whatever is going to happen, and they're going to be a part of the protest, and hopefully we're going to have them come join us in San Francisco, KPFA and Pacifica Radio, covering the entire day, and we're delighted that we're going to be a part of it. Francisco Herrera, are you with us?
Right here, ready and able.
Welcome. Tell me what you're up to, Francisco. What are you doing out there?
Well, there's a couple of things. It's very interesting as we are demanding no kings, and this is the third of no kings. At the same time, I just left 15th and Valencia, where the American Indian Cultural District is celebrating, you know, its existence as the only recognized state designated cultural district here in California, and I think in the United States. So just a little bit about that. From 10 to 3 tomorrow, there will be celebrations here on basically 16th and Mission, that whole block, really with rappers, with speakers, with vendors. It's very much of a sort of a powwow on the street, where people will be coming and celebrating the existence of the cultural district, which celebrates existence before the United States was a country, right? That has been here thousands of years. At the same time, at 12 o'clock, people are going to be joining to start the march at Justin Herman Plaza, Dennis and folks. I think Richard will probably be there. We're going from Justin Herman to the Civic Center at Fulton Park there in the Fulton Plaza, where there will be speakers, among them yours truly, and representing the Nuevo Sol Day Labor and Domestic Workers, as well as many groups who will be speaking. There's poets and music as well. And we'll see you there. We'll have members of the Nuevo Sol Day Labor and Domestic Workers Center will be with you there. And at the same time, from 1 to 3, there will be a No Kings West Side or Ocean Beach at Judah, and the Great Highway will be about 1,000 people there, commemorating the same spirit, and probably doing some activities in that area from 1 to 3 over on Judah and the Great Highway. So San Francisco is gearing up. At the same time, in Oakland at Frank Ogawa Plaza at noon as well will be the start of the march on the Oakland side. So people have a place to go to be active and to raise our voice in demanding all of this, not just the attempt to establish a dictatorship in this nice and fascist, but exactly the what we're just talking about, the waste and indiscriminate attempt of genocide of the Palestinian people as well, Dennis. So people are active here in the Bay Area to make a difference.
Let me just back up and let people know that there are a couple of protests. They're happening everywhere. There's one in West Berkeley at University in San Pablo. I'm getting something here from Gavilan. Power belongs to the people. Join us. This is Oakland. Join us in Frank Agawa Plaza at 12 p.m. for people who want to do it that way. These marches, these protests are happening all over the country. Francisco, tell us about, Gavilan's going to jump in a moment, but talk about the special role and the protection that's required within the communities that you represent, the day laborers, and the people who don't have the documents that apparently make some people human and some people being able to be treated like animals and less than people.
Right, as you know, as we all know, immigrant peoples, brown folks, and in particular day laborers have been the canary in the coal mine of what the United States federal fascist regime right now wants to do with the general working class. But we've been on the forefront of the attack. Numbers of day laborers who've died at the Home Depots. We had the, you know, very controversial participation of TSA folks pointing out a woman that was headed to Guatemala last Sunday evening, who was deported when she was already basically leaving, and they left her children behind as they forcibly deported her. And we have day laborers and folks who are contributing to the local economies who are targeted. So it's been wonderful to see the participation of neighbors throughout the San Francisco Bay Area, Oakland and Berkeley, doing Adopt a Corner, where people basically are watching and supporting, creating areas of solidarity and support for immigrant workers, as well as the Adopt a School, where people are actually siding with families, helping them get their children to school and avoid the kidnapping that's going on. Because we know that folks, even though they can get out of detention because if they don't sign the documentation, they're still exposed and they're still treated with torture. Dirty water in these places, no cooking facilities. They'd be giving breakfast at 2 a.m. or at middle of the day in the afternoon. They're not taken to the hospital if they get sick. People are being literally tortured, put into freezing cold rooms, lights 24 hours a day, disorienting torture so people will self-deport, and then in spite of that, people are sustaining that torture and being able to come out because they don't sign these documentation. So folks in the communities have come out in supporting Adopt a Corner and Adopt a School, Adopt Families to help. And people can continue to join those by going to adoptacornersf@gmail.com to sign up to any of the corners, whether it's East Bay or West Bay. Through that email, they can sign up and say that they're willing to participate. It's been really inspiring and emotional to see the community come out in this wave of support, of which we're going to see a major expression tomorrow at these marches, right, Dennis? But it's been very important to see people participate in this way of saying, I will not let fascism into this state, into this country, or in my neighborhood.
Francisco, it's always good to have you with us. My concern is this, you know, tomorrow is another No King's Day, and it's great mm-hmm. to have people mobilized to get out. But once those days are over, a lot of people, the majority of people, go back to their lives, you know, back to their comfort zones, back to their, you know, comfortable existence, whereas brown folks We don't get that, you know, that privilege. You know, we're always on alert. Even you and I, who are citizens born in this country, always have to be on alert that we might be singled out, we might be targeted, we might be pulled over. And that's really unnerving for a lot of folks. But tomorrow, they're also going to be at this particular No Kings Day. They've added No Kings, No War. Well, I hope that the second phase of it, No War, also includes the low-intensity war raging in this country against brown folks. And I mean, it's only going to get worse. I hear that between now and summer, the ICE force might be doubled, you know, and out of control. Secret police, lawless, with a license to kill. Do you see day laborers, domestic workers concerned about that? And added to that is the big situation we're seeing every day now, where the United States has committed 30,000 troops, and there's another 10,000 being sent, you know, to actually have what they call boots on the ground, an invasion force into Iran. And as we know from past conflicts of war, it's always, you know, la raza and black folks that get thrown into the front lines to be grinded up into ground beef. I know I've heard from a couple of jornaleros, a couple of day labor families who have sons, you know, that joined the armed forces as a way to get money to help, you know, legalize, to help their parents get legalized and get papers. I know also one friend of mine who's a farm worker out of the Modesto area in the San Joaquin Valley, whose son joined the Air Force a year ago. And now I got calls from her saying, what can I do? Is this putting my son in danger? I mean, are you hearing anything like that from the folks you work with, the day laborers, domestic workers?
Yes, of course, Gavilan. And to your point, ever since I was, I think, 10 years old, I knew that the prison industrial complex was one of the roads that I had to evade because we're targeted people. And so, yes, we've been dealing with this form of another form of genocide here in this country. And tomorrow, precisely, because of our members, of course, are feeling the tension, the fear, we've had cases of people that became catatonic, that can't leave their house, as the husband was kidnapped and finally came out. But, you know, so we yes, our community is experiencing the torture of this attack. And what one of the solutions that is small is that we're actually going to have tabling tomorrow at this march for people to join in to adopt a corner, for people to participate in supporting with jobs and food and support for people who are afraid to leave their house, to take food to them, emergency support, these kinds of activities that folks can participate in. Because as you say, the march is over, and we are going to continue seeing the violence as we've been seeing it forever. Really.
And I think that's a good moment. That's a good place to bring Dick Becker back into this. Dick, do you have any questions for Francisco? And your final comments on your best case circumstance in terms of where we are going in this culture. Is it something like Trump, people will finally see how ridiculous these extreme right-wingers are and that fascism isn't the answer?
Yeah. Hey, Francisco. Good to hear you. You know, I think that the big issue, and so far it's been happening, is that people, in the midst of all this and all the horrors that we're seeing, and like what Francisco is describing, and Miguel as well, you know, that there is a consistency that I don't think we've seen before in terms of people continually turning out. And there's the big demonstrations, but there's also the day-to-day in cities all over the country. And very, very little of that gets reported, particularly the defense of immigrants. But where it did get reported, of course, and which what I think made a very big difference in this whole movement, a big difference, was what happened in Minnesota and in Minneapolis. And you can see
In the aftermath of that, the two top officials were forced out. Noam and Bovino were forced out. It doesn't solve the problems, of course, but it was a big step. It was a very determined movement there, and that's what we need. We need that determination. We need to all come out tomorrow, but we need to continue to join in defense of the immigrants, to come out against the war, to come out against all those who are being threatened. And that's the majority of the population of this country. Civil rights laws, benefits that people have won over the years, all of that is under attack, still under attack. But again, as I said earlier, I think it can be defeated if we stay strong.
We have to continue. That's right, Richard. We have to continue building towards a general strike, because this is the only thing that will stop the war machine, is people dropping everything, no shopping, no working, no feeding this war machine that just gobbles everybody up and throws them into the trash can. We have had enough of billionaires calling for war, and it's time for people to say no more, ya basta, we will not participate. I love that Gandhian expression, the first step of nonviolence is non-participation with evil. And it's time, and it's like Richard, like you're saying, it's building one step at a time. It's amazing the small towns and communities that are coming out, like you're saying, Richard, and not just being in solidarity with each other, but being clearly against the war, being clearly against this fascist administration. And so we have to continue to step. Every step might seem insignificant, but it is not. It's very important.
And if I could just say one other thing, it's only 4 weeks till May Day. So we have tomorrow, and then we have May Day. And let's hope that people really take up no shopping, no school, no work.
Well, why May Day, by the way?
International labor.
I know. Let's remember. I don't. You know, when I went to school, we didn't talk about, you know, this kind of day as it represents the people. And I think that's part of it, isn't it, Richard? To remember that we have a history of resistance, and to bring that along, because tomorrow is just one day. In many days to come, right?
Well, we're in the same generation, Dennis. I think all of us are in the same generation. And I think we can remember when May Day was Law Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was it what?
Law Day. In New York State, anyways, it was Law Day.
Law
You're
Day?
To celebrate the law.
You celebrate the law, uh-huh. Which law would you be... Never mind.
But over the decades, it's become the International Labor Day.
Yes.
All over the world. And correct me if I'm wrong, Richard, but what I've heard from other sources and so forth is that other countries around the world are actually in solidarity with the No King's Day and No War here in the United States. And there... In their countries, they're going to be having basically the same kind of, actions of no kings, no war from the United States.
All right.
Well, saying too much for ourselves, I think the whole world is looking to what happens in the United States right now. That what happens in the United States is the key. We're at the key moment right now.
I agree. I really do agree.
Correct. And I think, and it seems to me that it's also an issue of inheritance. You know, our grandparents, great-grandparents, parents gave the time for us to be able to have 8 hours a day, which was the big, when the massacre happened over in Haymarket Square. People were struggling so kids don't have to work like the way Miami and Florida wants to put children back to work, right? And so it's that basically the baton has been passed to the next generation. We cannot just rest on the laurels of other people's blood, sweat, and tears. You know, it's our turn to pick up the mantle and keep going.
No kings tomorrow, everybody. We'll see you somewhere in the streets or somewhere close by. We thank both of you, all of you who joined us today, but especially appreciate Dick Becker, Francisco Herrera, Salvador Reza, our own Miguel Gavilan Molina. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This show is Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
Yes, democracy.
Hey, bye. Solidarity.
Solidarity.
Uh-oh.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public